The key to achieving this balance lies in the way people write standards, as well as who contributes to them. First, the standardized work must be specific enough to be a useful guide, yet general enough to allow for some flexibility. Repetitive manual work can be standardized to a high degree, going into detail about sequences of steps and times. On the other hand, it would not make sense in engineering to specify a step-by-step way of performing the work. There are general plans with milestones, and then technical information about the product that appears in engineering checklists. For example, knowing how the curvature of the hood of a car will relate to the air and wind resistance of that body part is more useful than dictating a specific parameter for the curve of all hoods. In product development, this is often represented as trade-off curves. Second, the people doing the work are in the best position to improve the standardized work. There is simply not enough time in a work week for industrial engineers to be everywhere writing and rewriting standards. Nor do people like following someone's detailed rules and procedures when they are imposed on them. Imposed rules that are strictly policed are often viewed as coercive and become a source of friction and resistance between management and workers. However, people happily focused on doing a good job appreciate getting tips and best practices, particularly if they have some flexibility in adding their own ideas. In addition, it is very empowering to find that your team is going to use your improvement as a new standard. Using standardization at Toyota is the foundation for continuous improvement, innovation, and employee growth. I think the problem with how standardization is used in many organizations is a result of our old nemesis, the mechanistic perspective. When the organization is viewed as a machine, then standardized work is a tool that is intended to make it a better machine. Figure 5.6 presents a common graphic in lean training that shows standards as backstops. You figure out the best way to do the job, write out the worksheet, teach it, and then shove the standardized work in place to prevent the process from slipping back. This ignores the fact that it is the person who can slip back, not the process. People have a way of doing the work that they are comfortable with, and developing any new habit takes repetition, practice. Figure 5.7 presents a more dynamic, fluid view of standardized work that recognizes the time and effort required for humans to learn a new way of doing things. In this case, I use the model for improvement developed by Mike Rother that is part of Toyota Kata and discussed under Principle 12. Kata are ways of doing things in the martial arts that you have to practice repeatedly with a coach to develop the skill and reduce variation. Kata also form the basis for job instruction training, practicing small pieces of the job repeatedly with a coach. The ideal state is to have standardized work that is practiced consistently by people coupled with step-by-step improvement through rapid PDCA cycles. The next level of performance can be thought of as a target condition that people need to strive for. You do this by experimenting with different methods for doing the work, and then when a performance threshold is achieved, you document the process and teach it as the best known way at that time. You turn the standardized work document into consistent behavior through job instruction training, which develops the new habits through repetition. Then the work group starts on the next lap with the next target condition, level of performance, experimenting and finding a better way. In this way, standardized work and continuous improvement become two sides of the same coin. Standardized work can be an ugly thing in the hands of control-oriented bureaucrats, and a beautiful thing when it enables creativity and continuous improvement. Enabling bureaucracy takes more effort, but it is well worth it.